Morning.
Good morning.
So what is she going to say about adultery? You have a question already?
Is that why they were playing Your Cheating Heart?
That's why they were playing Your Cheating Heart. Yes. Yes, Kit has a song for every occasion. So at first I thought that speaking about adultery might be a little risque or titillating. And the more I thought about it, I realized it's everywhere. TV shows, movies, certainly in our lives. Don't most of us have a story about some significant other who had a cheating heart? And some of us carry our own guilt about cheating, or not. I have come to resent the movies that make me root for the cheaters. You know those movies? A really nice guy is married to the wrong woman. She's unpleasant and demanding, and he meets Sandra Bullock or Meg Ryan or some free spirit, and he's captivated by her, and they run off together, and never mind the wife, who might have been unpleasant for a good reason. And these are usually comedies. So it's common because it's a common event. It's a common theme because it's a common event. So before I get too depressed, let's just skip right to the metaphysical meaning. We look beyond the literal meaning to see what we can learn. We also look at what Jesus taught, because he wasn't literal either. The word adultery comes from a Latin root that was also used for the word adulterate. We adulterate something when we pollute or dilute it, usually by adding something extra, like adding chemicals to the ocean or, you know, smoke to the air, or like adding water to wine to make it go further. So in marriage, adultery is adding another person, which dilutes the strength of the marriage, pollutes the relationship in an effort to get more. The word in Hebrew comes from a root that means abandoning one's principles. So either way, adultery means a loss of integrity, of wholeness. It's not so much what two people do together as what we do to ourselves, adulterate our principles, our self-worth. Then, of course, Jesus came along and made it more difficult. He said what he always said, that life is consciousness. Before we take any action, we have thought about it, and it's the thought that counts. That was one of his basic teachings. Remember what Jimmy Carter said about this? There was a huge uproar at the time. But for those of you who may not have memories that are 46 years old, I cannot believe I have adult memories from 46 years. But I was out of college when this happened. So anyway, Jimmy Carter was a man, a Democrat, who was running for president in 1976. And he gave an interview to Playboy magazine, because men buy it for the articles. That's what men have told me. So if you remember Jimmy Carter, he taught adult Sunday school in his Baptist church in Georgia for many years, so he knew his Bible. And here's what he said to Playboy. I try not to commit a deliberate sin. I recognize I'm going to do it anyhow because I'm human and I'm tempted. Christ set some almost impossible standards for us. The Bible says thou shalt not commit adultery. Christ said, I tell you that anyone who looks on a woman with lust has in his heart already committed adultery. Jimmy said, I've looked on a lot of women with lust. I've committed adultery in my heart many times. This is something that God recognizes that I will do and have done, and God forgives me for it. Well, a media feeding frenzy. I think a lot of reporters were stunned to learn that Jesus really did say this, that lust in your heart is just as bad. And remember, this was before Gary Hart and before Bill Clinton. So this was unusual for its time. Jimmy went on to say, he was trying to make a point. He was trying to say, you can't judge other people too harshly for their so-called sins if you have had the same thoughts yourself. Because Jesus said it's the thought that counts. And Jimmy was exactly right about that. Jesus made that point over and over. The laws of Moses, the Ten Commandments, are about doing, doing what we should or shouldn't do. And the Jews in Jesus' day had been following those laws for centuries. So they wanted to get his take on it. They might have been hoping he had something different to say. And he did. Jesus interpreted each law about being instead of doing, which made it even harder. What are we holding in consciousness? If we make a mistake, it started in thought. Now, in the physical realm, our brains collect evidence to support whatever we believe or expect. In the metaphysical realm, our thoughts attract events, people, experiences that match whatever we believe or expect. So we know our thoughts become our reality. We adulterate our thoughts about other people, not by lusting for them, but by seeing them as anything other than God. We pollute something pure when we fail to see the Christ in other people, when we add blame, judgment, unforgiveness, and heap it onto someone who is, by definition, an expression of God on the earth. We're breaking that first commandment again, the only one that really counts, the one that says it's all God. There's one presence and one power, and we are all divine in our essence. So you remember this Bible story about the woman taken in adultery, which means she was caught in the act, and they dragged her out of whoever's house and hauled her in front of Jesus. Just her, not the man she was with. And they asked Jesus again about the law, which, according to Moses, said, stone her. And that's when Jesus said, let him who is without sin cast the first stone. And all those men slunk away. I like to think they slunk. The Bible doesn't actually say that. It just says they kind of left. So maybe Jesus meant let anyone who's committed adultery, not committed adultery, throw the first stone. Or maybe he meant anybody who's never done anything wrong could throw a stone. Without sin is pretty broad. He might have meant if you've even thought in ways that do not honor the divine in yourself and others. Because that is what he taught about sin. We not only adulterate our thoughts when we see less than God in other people, but when we don't tell the truth about ourselves as God, too. Whether we put ourselves down or exaggerate our greatness, either way, we're adulterating the truth. This is back to the third commandment, the correct use of the words, I am. We take the Lord's name in vain when we attach I am to anything that does not reflect our divinity. So how do we go around being divine all the time? I've been talking about this for a year. Unapologetic divinity. We teach what we need to learn, I know. I'm doing a workshop on it this week at a minister's conference. How do we elevate ourselves into divine consciousness some greater percentage of the time? Because I think that's where these commandments are leading us. We live from our own divinity in several ways. The first is, watch your language, with I am. I am is the Christ of your being, your divine essence. I am that I am, God said at the burning bush. So you decree what you are by how you use the words I am. They have creative power. So tell the truth about yourself. I am God in expression. I am a spiritual being in a human body. Of course there are days when we feel bad and we aren't happy. But try to say that's how I feel instead of I am. I feel tired, angry, sad. And we all do sometimes, but make it temporary, not a declaration of your being. Second, seek first the kingdom of heaven. We do this by nurturing our relationship with the divine. Whether you picture God out there as watching you, or it's the divine within, or it's just your human spirit, don't get distracted by people and money and situations. This is back to commandment number 2, worshiping false idols. Stay focused on the creative activity of God on earth and in your life. That's divine consciousness. The Apostle Paul gave us advice on how to do this, how to do both of these, to express our divinity and to seek the kingdom of heaven first. In his letter to the church at Philippi, he said, "Whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things." So it's back to thought. What are we holding in thought? Because thoughts have creative power. And anything we do, whether it's good for us or not, starts in thought. So we want to create our lives from thoughts that are pure and positive, not adulterated, not polluted. The third way we elevate ourselves into divine consciousness is to remember that we live in a universe of abundance and everything we want is already ours, which brings us to Commandment 8, "Thou shalt not steal." At first, I didn't see any connection between these two commandments, adultery and stealing. But you kind of have to have a cheating heart for either one. And they're both about lack. They both start with the belief that I don't have everything I want, so I'm just going to take it. I'm going to find it wherever I can. Stealing, like killing, is not a commandment I worry much about until I realize how broad it is in consciousness. Actually, it's pretty broad at the level of human action. Stealing is not just breaking into people's homes or robbing banks, but it's shoplifting. It's employee theft, everything from ballpoint pens to embezzlement. Cheating on taxes, insurance fraud, insider trading, any financial sleight of hand. And then there's stealing time, sick days when you're not really sick, long lunch breaks, taking a little vacation at your desk. Monopolizing a conversation is stealing time. Or stealing results. Cheating on a test is stealing a grade. Plagiarism is stealing someone else's work. We steal ideas, we take credit for what is not ours. In Moses' day, a thief had to repay the victim fivefold, five times over. So if you stole an ox, you had to return five oxen. Later, hundreds of years later, the Quran said, if someone steals, cut off their hands. Stealing was taken really seriously in that part of the world. And three major religions developed there: Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. But rather than be afraid of the punishment, it's better just to know how spiritual law works, which is, what we put out into the universe comes back to us. So knowing that, we reach a point where we wouldn't dream of stealing or adulterating or killing, even in our thoughts, because we know how the law of mind action works. Our circumstances match our patterns of thought. Our beliefs become real in our lives. So we can have anything if we create those conditions in consciousness. Or Abraham Hicks would say, if our energetic vibration is a match to it. Believing in good luck or bad luck is lack thinking. Luck is lack. You can remember that. It's believing there's not enough for everyone, that results are arbitrary. And they're not. They have everything to do with us and our thoughts. We create conditions in consciousness that match our abundance, that draw to us whatever it is we are holding in mind, consciously or not. So the goal is to make it more conscious. Athletes work on this. They talk about it a lot when they're interviewed. They talk about mental toughness and focus, visualization, meditation to be peaceful within. They're creating conditions in consciousness to be winners. It's more than just their physical practice. And the same is true for us. We can work really hard in the physical. We can be creative in our jobs and still not make money if we're holding thoughts of lack and limitation. It's the condition of our consciousness. And this carries over to prayer. You know, I've been working with the book by Eric Butterworth called Breaking the Ten Commandments. He says, begging God in prayer is a form of stealing. We're trying to get something from God when it is not a match to our consciousness. And we know it's not, or it would be here already. It's the Father's good pleasure to give us the kingdom. We don't have to beg. We can use prayer just to open ourselves to the flow of our good. Every person is provided for in an abundant universe. There's no need to beg God for it, or convince God to give it, or find a way to steal it. We just seek first the kingdom, nurture that relationship with the divine, keep our thoughts focused on what is pure and good and honest and worthy, and speak that truth, I am. That gets us into the flow of our good. We don't need shortcuts like stealing. We will live in constant amazement at everything that is flowing to us. There's only one thing we can really do. We've been talking about how to be, what we hold in mind. The one thing we can do is to give. That's the antidote to stealing. It's ironic, isn't it? But this is how we create conditions in consciousness that draw our good to us. We give. This is why every prosperity class has a segment on clearing out clutter. It's literally creating space to receive more. We're also putting things back in circulation. We're giving. We're getting into the flow of giving and receiving. We're creating space for that flow to come through us. So give anywhere. Donate to the silent auction here. Give to charities in town. Give away jewelry, cars, whatever you're not using. Give time. Give love, compliments, gratitude. Giving establishes that consciousness of abundance. And whatever we hold in consciousness attracts more of the same. Like iron filings to a magnet. Like the Starship Enterprise on a tractor beam. I knew that image would work for you. We call in our experiences and our stuff with our thoughts. So we want unadulterated thoughts. We elevate our thoughts into divine consciousness. By focusing on whatever is true and lovely, speaking words of truth, especially with I am, seeking first the kingdom, nurturing that relationship with the divine, knowing the abundance of the universe is already ours. We don't have to cheat or steal to get what we want. And then the only thing we can do to enhance our divine consciousness is to give, to step into the flow of well-being. We keep all the commandments by holding on to awareness of ourselves as God in human bodies. And we think and act accordingly, living as the Christ. The Ten Commandments are our training wheels for learning to live in divine consciousness. So let's take these thoughts into meditation with Kit.
Just breathe. Just breathe deeply. Centeredness. Just continue to breathe. Let's just stay very, very focused on our breath this morning. The breath is that representation of divine circulation. Let's focus on that word, circulation. And bring to mind the very first thing that may come to you where you feel like you might be a little blocked. Maybe in prosperity or health. Without judgment, without defining or trying to find a word to say it's good or bad, just look at it, just observe it. Comes up around that, just breathe into it. For it comes up to be looked at, not to be buried, not to be covered up, paved over, hidden under something else, diluted, scattered. Just simply observe it. And know that there is absolutely a greater, more loving, divine truth to be discovered. Begin to change your perspective about it. And rather than looking at it as something that doesn't fit or isn't a part of you or shouldn't or couldn't, where you might want to blame, simply turn it around and look at it as an opportunity for growth, for forgiveness, and know that every right thing, every right answer, every little bit of guidance that you may seek all the supply, all of the strength or courage, is already available to you for whatever this situation is, or this thing, or this word. It is already known in the mind of God to be right and perfect in its timing, and in the way that it shows up. So embrace it. Embrace it and give thanks to it. And breathe. One more time, and join me in the Alleluia.